Stay tuned for Nightline Africa, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Joe Palca reporting. 15 civilians in Aleppo killed by purported government barrel bombs. At least 15 civilians were killed in barrel bomb attacks by suspected government helicopters on a rebel-held district of Aleppo on Saturday. The Britain-based Syrian Observatory for Human Rights said government aircraft had dropped two explosive-packed barrel bombs minutes apart on the Mahdi district of eastern Aleppo. According to the group, the strikes hit near a tent where people were mourning those killed in a barrel bomb attack from Thursday in a neighboring district where 15 people, among them 11 children, lost their lives. The observatory said the Syrian government and its Russian ally are the only ones operating helicopters over Aleppo. The government denies that it uses barrel bombs. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry says the situation in Syria has dramatically deteriorated since the brief oasis of calm that followed a ceasefire agreement in February. Mr. Kerry and the Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov met in Geneva about their renewed efforts to end the fighting in Syria, and then Mr. Kerry spoke to reporters.
We don't want to have a deal for the sake of a deal. We want to have something done that is effective and that works for the people of Syria, that makes the region more stable and secure, and that brings us to the table here in Geneva to find a political solution.
In the meantime, residents of the Damascus suburb of Deraya are fleeing, leaving a community in ruins from the fighting. The UN Security Council has unanimously condemned North Korea's latest ballistic missile launch, calling it a grave violation of North Korea's international obligations. The strong denunciation was backed by China, North Korea's main ally. North Korea's latest ballistic missile launch Tuesday was fired from a submarine. This is VOA News. Police in Bangladesh say they killed at least three Islamist extremists today. The suspected mastermind of last month's deadly attack on a Dhaka cafe filled with foreigners is reported to be among those killed. Islamic State claimed responsibility for that cafe attack on July the 2nd. Afghan officials say Taliban insurgents overran and captured a district in the country's east following heavy fighting with Afghan security forces that left several police and militants dead and many more wounded. Officials told reporters on Saturday that the militants captured a district in eastern Paktia province. Authorities say security forces have since withdrawn from the area, which is a key transit route that includes links to the neighboring Khost province and Pakistan. The UN Refugee Agency has expressed concern that the agreement between the European Union and Turkey to curb the flow of refugees into Europe could unravel. Lisa Schlein reports from UNHCR headquarters in Geneva.
UN Refugee Agency spokesman William Spindler says the UNHCR is following the situation closely. He tells VOA the agency cannot afford to be complacent and has to be prepared for any contingencies.
We don't see any other alternative. There is no plan B. So we are very worried that if this situation changes, we might see again the widespread suffering by people, deaths at sea, and so on.
Spindler accuses the EU of not living up to its commitments. Last September, he notes the EU agreed to relocate 160,000 refugees in Greece and Italy among 24 member countries. To date, he says, fewer than 4,000 asylum seekers have been relocated. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
For more on this story, visit our website at voanews.com. Today is a day of mourning in Italy for the victims of this week's deadly earthquake in the central part of the country. In the meantime, rescuers are continuing to remain hopeful about finding survivors, but progress has slowed. More than 280 people died in the 6.2 magnitude quake. Italian Prime Minister Matteo Renzi, who declared a state of emergency in the affected areas, has promised to rebuild the shattered towns and pledged an immediate $50 million in funds for relief and rebuilding. The U.S. Space Agency's Juno spacecraft gets its closest look at Jupiter today. After spending 5 years in space, Juno is now poised to make its closest pass to the solar system's largest planet. NASA says Juno's principal goal is to understand the evolution and origin of Jupiter. The head of the U.S. Customs and Border Protection is urging Central Americans to not make the dangerous trip to the United States to try to enter the country illegally. Migratory flow to the U.S. is mostly from the Central American nations of Honduras, Guatemala, and El Salvador. Joe Palca reporting from Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
morning and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of The Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotty in Washington.
Where I am, things are going very smoothly. You have a lot of people inside the polling stations, and I'm quite sure they will help extend the deadline.
Gabonese vote as Bongo seeks a second seven-year presidential term.
The Electoral Commission of Ghana has always done periodic registration where specific times and periods are announced for prospective voters to register.
The Electoral Commission of Ghana ends a limited voter registration process Saturday.
It has been proven you cannot work with President Salva Kiir in any agreement worldwide. You need the cooperation of the two willing partners.
And a South Sudanese official says it's obvious that former rebel leader Dr. Riek Machar is unwilling to work with President Salva Kiir. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. Gabonese choose their next president Saturday in a one-round election. There are 11 candidates running, including incumbent President Ali Bongo, the son of Omar Bongo, who ruled the Central African nation for over four decades, and opposition leader Jean Ping, a former ally of the elder Bongo. The electoral campaign has been tense, with the opposition claiming Bongo could rig the vote. For the latest development, my colleague Douglas Impuga reached VOA's French to Africa reporter Idriss Fall in the capital, Libreville.
Well, in Libreville, where I am, things are going very smoothly. You have a lot of people inside the polling stations, and I'm quite sure they will help extend the deadline, which is normally supposed to close at 6 at the place, the school centre where President Bongo voted. And the place where Jumping voted, there were so many people that I'm absolutely sure they may have to extend the voting until maybe 7 or maybe 8 p.m. tonight.
You say the turnout has been big. Were the voting materials delivered in time?
Normally, they were supposed to begin at 7 and finish at 6. Really, it went very slowly. And when it is slow, you know, the lines did not evolve very quickly. So the turnout from the polling station I saw was huge, was big. And I'm not sure they will be able to finish everything by 6 p.m. So that I was saying that I expect they extend the voting beyond 6 p.m. But mostly the city is calm and people are a little bit anxious. Even to find a restaurant where we could have lunch, we had to look outside Libreville so we can have something to eat. Everything is closed because people are scared a little bit. Some restaurant where we went, people are telling them they're closed for 4 days because they think maybe after the result you may have some contest or some violence.
You talk of people being scared. As we know, the campaign period was very acrimonious, marked by months of bitter exchanges between the two main camps. How is the mood among the people? Is this fear visible among the people?
Really, people are scared here because they think, most of them, because the two camps, during the campaign, you know, it was not the kind of programs or debate of ideas. It was attacks, accusations. And because of that, and the opposition is quite sure they're going to win, and the side of the government and the president also, they're absolutely quite sure they're going to win. When I interviewed Jean Ping 2 days ago, he said that if they don't rig the election, he's quite sure he's going to win. And when you have two parties in front of that, and the Electoral Commission going to publish the results maybe by Monday evening, if one camp decide that they lose and they were rigged, I think nobody knows what's going to happen here.
Both Bongo and his opponent worked under the former president. Do you think they can work out an amicable solution after the results are announced?
Well, that is the main question. if Bongo is announced winning the opposition going to contest, how are they going to contest? I don't know. Normally, they have legal means to do so. And if Bongo lose and accept he lost, maybe also it's going to bring calm. But in other ways, I don't see if Bongo is a proclaimed winner, I'm sure even Ping, if he does not call for people to revolt, you know, some. If you take a city like Port-Gentil, nobody knows what's going to happen there because it's a city which used to revolt. After especially in 2009, there were a lot of people killed in Port-Gentil because Port-Gentil is a main part of the opposition. And the other thing is now with the price of oil going down, the city is economically kind of in difficulty, and it does not help. And those two things together, I think, may bring kind of revolt or violence in Port-Gentil, at least.
Idriss Fall is a VOA French to Africa reporter. He spoke with my colleague Douglas Mpuga from the Gabonese capital, Libreville. The Electoral Commission of Ghana will end the limited voter registration process Saturday, this as it compiles a voter list to be used for the December 7 general election. The Electoral Commission also recently expressed concern about political parties using buses to transport supporters to registration centres. This, the electoral body says, overwhelms officials at the designated registration centres. Eric Jakpasu, spokesperson for the Electoral Commission, told me the electoral body is on course with its preparation to organize the upcoming polls.
The Electoral Commission of Ghana has always done periodic registration where specific times and periods are announced for prospective voters to register. But the law now provides for continuous registration. What this simply means is that throughout the working week, anybody who feels at any point in time to be qualified and wants to register can just go to our district offices and get registered. But this is to be fashioned out together with the political parties. So that is what the political parties have agreed together with the Electoral Commission, that every Friday of the week will be for continuous registration. But for the purposes of this year's election, we have only 2 days in this month of August for the continuous voters registration. The first day was the 19th of August, and then the second day was yesterday, 26th of August. But because of some few challenges, network challenges, there is an extension to finish the continuous registration today, after which we just finalize the register for the political parties.
After today's extension ends, what is the next step forward as the Electoral Commission, as part of the Electoral Commission process to compile this voter list to be used for the December 7 elections?
We finished with the registration of the people who registered with the NHIS card in 2012. We finished with their re-registration, and today we enter the continuous voters registration. The next step will be to exhibit the provisional voters register of the NHIS re-registrants and those who will be registered during this continuous voters registration. So after the exhibition of this register, we'll merge it with the main register that which was exhibited for the past 21 days. Then we'll get a final register for the political parties. But having finished with the register issue, the next major activity will be the receipt of nominations of candidates for both presidential and parliamentary elections.
When is the date scheduled for receiving the nomination of the presidential candidates?
Yeah, the date for the receipt of nominations is the 29th and 30th of September.
The Electoral Commission has expressed concern about political parties busing their supporters to registration centres for this limited registration exercise that the Electoral Commission has embarked on, which ends today. What was the major concern?
Busing is a phenomenon which has crept into our activities, especially when it comes to registration. It's a practice where political parties, as it were, bus their people from all centres to all places to the registration centres. It is a bad practice because registration and voting are individual affairs. People are expected to go on their own as individuals to get their names registered and then on their own voluntarily go and then cast their ballots. What this practice creates for registration is that more often than not, you have
a large number of people conveyed to the registration centers during the last few days of the exercise. And this creates congestion and then serious problem for the registration officials, especially in the last days, as it becomes very difficult, if impossible, to register all the persons who are back in.
Recently, we understand the chairperson of the Electoral Commission, Madam Charlotte Osei, met with news editors in the country. What was the meeting about, and what did they discuss, and what was the response from the news editors?
You know, the media is a very critical stakeholder when it comes to elections, and it's very important the Electoral Commission engages with the media, and the media also engages with us as a means of disseminating information, as a means of having the avenue to, as it were, educate voters and to get the media supporting the Electoral Commission in its activities. So as part of our communication strategy, on the 23rd of August, the chairperson of the Electoral Commission and the other commissioners met with senior editors of the media in an informal interaction where the commission highlighted its main activities and then also gave the opportunity to the media to, as it were, contribute, ask questions, and then raise concerns so that together we can work towards a peaceful election. That was the essence of the interaction with the media.
Eric Jakpasu is the spokesperson for the Electoral Commission of Ghana. He spoke with me from the capital, Accra. A string of assaults and arrests of journalists in Nigeria has fresh freedom advocates worried about the climate for freedom of expression in Africa's most populous country. For VOA, Chris Stein reports from the commercial capital, Lagos.
Police officers showed up at Musa Azare's house in the capital, Abuja, on a Saturday.
They said they were security personnel, specifically men of the Nigerian police force. They were dispatched from Bauchi to come and arrest me.
They demanded that Azare, who is known for making social media postings critical of the government of Bauchi State in Nigeria's northeast, come with them. Only when he reached a police station outside the capital did he learn that he was accused of cyberstalking and criminal defamation. Azare was eventually released. While Bauchi officials say they had nothing to do with his arrest, Azare believes he was targeted for his critical commentary. Azare's detention is one of several arrests or detentions of journalists to occur in Nigeria in recent months. Nigeria's constitution guarantees freedom of expression and the press. Information Minister Lai Mohammed said in June that the government of President Muhammadu Buhari does not intend to do anything to stifle press freedom. But Peter Nkanga, West Africa representative for the Committee to Protect Journalists, says freedom of the press in Nigeria is eroding.
How it has been eroded by the actions of government institutions and government authorities who are ensuring that that freedom of expression, that freedom of the press, that freedom to hold opinion gradually, steadily, is being eroded.
This month, Nigeria's army ordered a journalist to come in for questioning after he tweeted a link to a video from the Boko Haram extremist group. In June, a journalist investigating arms smuggling was attacked at a Nigerian border crossing. Nkanga said this happened in front of customs officials who did not intervene. It's not just journalists who are being targeted. Police recently arrested a man in the southwestern Ogun state for naming his dog Buhari after the president. The information minister, Mohammed, was not available for comment. Shuab Lemon, national secretary of the Nigerian Union of Journalists, says he attributes the recent attacks to Buhari's pledge to crack down on corruption. Since Buhari came to office last year, many journalists have reported on allegations of stealing by state and local officials.
I am not surprised that daily you find one instance or the other where a journalist is either picked up at the instance of a state governor or a powerful politician for writing against corruption or for bringing up issues that need public attention and adequate scrutiny.
Mai Trong, head of advocacy group Freedom House's Internet Freedom Program, says politicians have used a law passed last year that criminalized activities like hacking and cyberstalking to target bloggers.
We've seen an uptick of bloggers particularly being targeted for arrest and charged under the cybercrime law for various types of writings related to posts about local governors or officials.
Nkanga of the Committee to Protect Journalists says the climate of press freedom will improve only if security agents and politicians who target journalists face justice. Chris Stein for VOA News, Lagos.
The South Sudanese Petroleum Minister says it has been clear for a while now that deposed FARC Vice President Dr. Riek Machar cannot work with President Salva Kiir to implement last year's peace accord. His comments came as Machar receives medical attention in neighboring Sudan. Petroleum Minister Ezekiel Lol Gatkuoth, a former ally of Machar, told me the peace agreement is currently being implemented by President Salva Kiir and newly installed FARC Vice President Taban Dengai.
As far as I know, the agreement is being implemented by the SPLM in opposition together with the SPLM and the Salva Kiir and other stakeholders. There is nobody pulling out from the agreement. The agreement is being implemented.
You have been quoted as saying that Dr. Riek Machar and President Salva Kiir cannot work together. Why?
Well, it is not me who is saying that, but it has been proven he cannot work with President Salva Kiir. In any agreement worldwide, you need the cooperation of the two willing partners. So President Salva Kiir is now a partner who will implement the agreement, and that is the first vice president of the republic. Well, Dr. Riek, in 2013, he had the same problem with Salva. In 2016, also the same problem. How do you conclude that? I think if you ask him, you will conclude that I cannot work with Salva. And you need somebody who can actually implement the agreement with President Salva Kiir.
So now that it appears that IGAD recognizes him as the second vice president and they want him to return, if he returns, what happens?
The SPLM in opposition leadership, they met the top leadership of the SPLM. And for your information, the SPLM in opposition is not a private property. It is a public property that belongs to the people of South Sudan, those who are allied to the SPLM in opposition. We met the deputy chairman, Alfred Ladogore, the secretary general, Diomato, then now the leader of the SPLM in opposition, Taban Dengai, and all the political bureau, minus former first vice president, Dr. Machar, and his wife. These are the only people who are not there. And all of us, we met and we have agreed that for us to continue with the implementation of the agreement, we must have a leader as SPLM in opposition. And we have elected Taban Dengai as our leader, and he's implementing the agreement. We have decided to go for peace and peace implementation. We cannot go back to war. The people of South Sudan, they have suffered enough, and we cannot encourage war again and again.
The spokesman of Dr. Machar, James Gadet Dak, said that when you met in Juba, you did not meet the quota because there are 25 members. He specifically said only four of you met under the auspices and the call by Salva Kiir just to undermine Dr. Riek Machar, and this was possibly what he calls a coup.
Well, subtract me and Taban Dengai for a time being. Was the deputy chairman who was deputy to Dr. Riek, was he with Dr. Riek or he was with us in Juba? What about the secretary general, Diomato? Dr. Diomato, was he with Dr. Riek or he was with us? Now, these are the leader plus Dr. Riek himself. These are the top three who will make a decision on behalf of everybody. The leadership of the SPLM, the political bureau members, there was only out of 10 ministers, seven they were here in Juba. So saying that it is just only one or two, this is just basically trying to create an unnecessary story.
There were reports that during a meeting, a lot of the members of the SPLMIO said that you should go back to Dr. Riek Machar, beg for forgiveness so things will move smoothly from the SPLMIO, and that you were adamant saying that you should go with President Salva Kiir because he's giving you new positions, among other things. What is your reaction to this report?
There is nothing like that in that story. It is unfounded. It is not true. Nobody is going back to Dr. Machar. Dr. Machar is in Khartoum now on humanitarian ground. I don't know if some of the people who are talking to you are legal experts. Humanitarian ground, you are admitted to that country on humanitarian ground, and there are rules and regulations that are governing humanitarian grounds when you are rescued by a country or a people based on the humanitarian ground. You are not even allowed to talk. You are not even allowed to perform your political activities. And the worst part of it, I was told that he's sick. he's actually being treated in Khartoum. For me, we wish him quick recovery. We pray for him to get well. But the people of South Sudan, they don't belong to one person. Or they are not properties of one person. They are for peace, and they want peace, and they will continue to implement the agreement. And for your information, the region and the world, they have recognized that now people are actually moving forward. And then a chance has been given by the whole world and the region that President Salva Kiir and First Vice President Abande Ngai will implement the agreement. Those who are interested in leading this country, let them wait for election, and the election will come.
Ezekiel Lol Gatkut is the South Sudanese Petroleum Minister. He spoke with me from the capital, Juba. Polluted air is a public health problem, not only outdoors but indoors as well. Experts say indoor pollution can be worse because of the variety of household chemicals that emit fumes inside our homes. But researchers have found that plants, as part of their carbon exchange cycle, can take up these pollutants, clearing up the air in homes. VOA's Jessica Berman reports.
We could not live without plants. They absorb the carbon dioxide that we exhale and release the oxygen we need to breathe. And we depend on plants to produce an enormous amount of oxygen, according to Vadud Neary from the State University of New York at Oswego.
Each of us breathe over 3,000 gallons of air every day. And also, we can't go without air over 3 minutes. So it means that air quality is extremely important, and we need a clean air to breathe every day.
But scientists say air pollution caused by chemicals called volatile organic compounds is 3 to 5 times greater inside our homes than outside. VOCs include cancer-causing benzene and formaldehyde, which are given off by paints, upholstery, printers, and stored petrol. Indoor air pollution can be the source of sick building syndrome, which can cause dizziness, asthma, and allergies. The traditional way of removing indoor air pollutants is through filtration methods that remove harmful air from the house while pumping in cleaner air from outdoors.
But we thought maybe we could use an easier and simpler and actually cheaper way to get rid of these VOCs.
Researchers have found that plants, as part of their carbon cycle and through photosynthesis, can absorb many of these chemicals. In a specially designed chamber, Neary and colleagues tested 5 different plants that are commonly found in central New York homes. The jade plant, spider plant, a bromeliad, Caribbean tree cactus, and Dracaenia. They were exposed to 8 different VOCs. Each plant took up many of the different chemicals, some specific to a particular plant, according to Neary.
We would recommend that instead of having one plant, 5 of 1 plant, we choose 1 of each to make sure that we uptake all type of VOCs from our air.
Neary says he got the idea to test plants for filtration from a 1984 report by the U.S. space agency NASA, which was investigating putting plants on the space station to clean the air. Neary discussed the air cleansing properties of plants at the annual meeting of the American Chemical Society. He says the next step is to place plants in actual rooms to see how well they perform. He's also interested in putting plants in nail salons to see how much acetone they absorb from nail polish. Jessica Berman, VOA News, Washington.
are listening to Nightline Africa on the English service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington, D.C. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent. And right now, it's time for music from our African collection. Enjoy.
Now, we don't upgrade the matter. Daily and weekly and monthly and quarter. Now, we don't talk to butter. Family to smile and we know get quanta. That's what you're so Yoruba. Make them no go forget say Badona Baba.
Many people.
nothing. People they carry me pay. One money nothing. Everybody run away. One money nothing. Nah, nah, nah. People they used to the play. I said one money nothing. Nobody look at my face. Hey. They say me that it is. Spend them for die. Oh, you make good at on no up for my sister. Oh, yeah, once in a while we supposed to say jolly. Oh, yeah, young kulu, that's my sherry. Oh, when money no day, everybody a bubble some. I say when money no day, I got you on your new one. I broke you to my man, for we turn about till I tell you. Tonight you no flavor to my yo. A very papa one of my ass. Like when money no day, umu wan ya boso no. I say when money no day, I love you, but no no no. I treat her than say baby. If you want to touch me, they don't. Tonight you no flavor to my yard. The weary papa want no bayasa.
The feeling, the feeling, the feeling, the feeling, the feeling, the boy. The ladies, the ladies, the ladies, the ladies, I want that the boy. Well, I see say when money no day, everybody run away.
Ananipenda vile misidangi, 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 ananipenda
alikofunwa. She's supposed to be my wife. She's supposed to be happy. She's supposed to have my ring. She's supposed to have my ring. She's supposed to be my wife. She's supposed to be happy. Watakupigia vigeregere, wanagere, watakuwa msalo mbele kukwimbia. Una meremeta, meremeta, kamata. Una meremeta, meremeta, kamata.
Some of them never know me. Some of them don't know me. Some of them keep for me. Every time the people don't sing, some of them wanna win for me. Some of them boogie down for me. We love the way the ladies are waiting for me. Everybody now, let go. Everybody go. I like the way you do it.
Break up. If you fight to make love, we will make up. If you the foundation, I break up. For you, I relocate though. We fly from London to Soweto. So, baby, I'm trying to go Mexico. I be you want go Puerto Rico. I'm on you, sweet and I'm mojito. Hurry up, baby, so make we go. Alele.
Boche, no, no, no. Como de ahí, boche, no, no, no. Ah, yeah. Boche, no, no, no. Como de ahí, boche, no, no, no. Ah, yeah. Boche, no, no, no. Give me money. Boche, no, no, no. That's your money. Boche, no, no, no. And I'm loving her way, cause she, no, 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 yeah.
The VOA.
To the top. Sari ma sari ma wo. Nantua maisha yako yale yumba pale ulipo wapoteza wazazi wako. Yule sari ma wa jana, sio sari ma wa leo. Amekuwa wa kujinamia na kujikatiza.
Sazenga surika gunga weku yetenga dinyanya Salima cheni sande uya yende Nesomi na umwenge Salima mili sande yule yule Dili yesoma na wemwenge Sima ya yuka na tosako Uliza kuwa nazo salima Salima zako na kupenda Salima nataka ni wako Salima na wale kujatenga Salima baba wa watata wako Salima zako na kupenda Salima nataka ni wako.
That was Music from the Continent. We hope you enjoyed it. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of the Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline team, managing editor Shaka Sally, reporter Douglas Impuga, producer Odette Frazier, and our engineer for today, Xiao Gang Chang. We say a big thank you for joining us. And remember, as the elders say, a patient that can swallow food makes the nurse doubtful. I'm your host, Peter Clote in Washington. Good evening, Africa.
An editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
After recent meetings in Nairobi with foreign ministers of a number of regional partners, U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry said that a regional protection force authorized by the United Nations Security Council is necessary to protect civilians in South Sudan's capital of Juba and to help facilitate the implementation of a peace accord reached by South Sudan's warring factions last year. The Security Council approved the Regional Protection Force within the United Nations mission in South Sudan on August 12th, after violence broke out in and around the capital between forces loyal to President Salva Kiir and former First Vice President Riek Machar. During the height of the July 7th to 11th violence, soldiers from both sides committed heinous crimes, including rape, murder, and wanton destruction of property. Government forces also attacked UN protection of civilian sites and a UN compound. Since 2013, when the conflict first started in South Sudan, the country has been ravaged, with thousands of people killed and over 2 million driven from their homes. Secretary Kerry noted that all the ministers who met in Nairobi agreed on the need for the deployment of the up to 4,000-member protection force authorized by the UN Security Council. Secretary Kerry emphasized that the force does not challenge the sovereignty of the country. It has, he said, a very clear mandate to protect people for their access, their freedom of movement, and their ability to remain free from attack or ambush from any source whatsoever. The hope is, he said, that the protection force will restore stability, will help the country to move faster to reconcile, will help by its presence alone provide assurance and confidence to people about the future. Mr. Kerry announced that the United States, which is the largest donor of humanitarian relief to the people of South Sudan, will give an additional $138 million toward that effort, bringing its total contribution to more than $1.7 billion. But the overwhelming need in the country, Mr. Kerry said, is to reinvigorate an inclusive political process and to implement the reforms that are set out in the peace agreement. Secretary of State Kerry urged the people of South Sudan to respect their countrymen as equal under the law and to demand that their leadership stop this fighting on an ethnic basis and get to the business of running the country in a responsible and inclusive way.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.